dreams don't glue. Uh-huh. Ed and Matt, they're the burnout kings. Dropping that knowledge with... All right, folks, buckle up. Today we're joined by someone who has seen more behavior plans, broken pencils, IEPs, and budget cuts than we could even dream of in our darkest staff meetings.
She taught special ed for 47 years. That is not a typo. That is 4-7 years.
Survived over 20 years in Baltimore City, brutal New England snow days, and the kinds of kids you swear bust in straight from a lesser-known circle of hell.
She is a certified legend, and also Ed's mom.
That's right, raised kids and taught other people's kids with emotional trauma, learning disabilities, and a strong desire to throw chairs.
Today, she is here to share what teaching used to be, what it's become, and why she didn't throw in the towel 30 years ago, like the rest of us wanted to.
Here we are recording straight from Mom's kitchen. Welcome to the Blackboard of Broken Dreams, Mom, or Sandy.
Thank you.
So, Sandy, we're going to start where it all began. Why did you get into teaching?
Well, I always liked school. I enjoyed school. And at first I thought I'd be a social studies teacher, but, you know, you can't get a job as a social studies teacher. And then I read the book, Flowers for Algernon, and it was about a retarded man who they found this cure for retardation, which is not the correct word right now, but... and I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. And so I thought maybe special ed. So that's what I did.
Okay. We talked, I think, about how social study teachers, it's a hard job to get because there's so many that want to do it, right?
Oh, right. I mean, I've had friends tell me that they want, their kids might go into social studies or history, and I'm like, well, good luck.
So it's nice to hear that it still was hard to get into when you started teaching.
It was.
Yep. That's crazy. So how about for your first job? Did you start right as a special ed teacher?
I did. I graduated in 1975 and had a few interviews, but special education jobs were hard to find back then because they weren't funding special ed like they do now. There was no IDEA. So they thought they wanted to take care of their kids with disabilities. They did. If not, they didn't. And so I interviewed a couple of places, got the job offer in Baltimore, got a job offer in Annapolis, and decided I didn't want to get up at 5 in the morning to do a split shift. And so I took the job in Baltimore. And it was a great experience.
5 in the morning, huh? Yeah. I don't blame you.
Like get up at 5 in the morning or leave at 5 in the morning?
Leave at 5 in the morning.
Leave at 5 in the morning?
They were doing split shifts because they were building a new school and they had all the kids in one school. And so it would have been crazy. You would have been home at 1 o'clock, but still.
Wow. So the idea of split shift has actually been around for, well 50 years now or more.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And it was with kids who had emotional disabilities, and I don't think I was quite ready for that as a new teacher.
No, in your early 20s, that's a hard thing to cope with, I'm sure.
It was, and as it was, I was teaching at a high school level with kids with disabilities, and back then they had other names for intellectually limited kids. Some of them were just slow learners, but they were as old as I was, and they'd seen a lot more life than I had growing up in suburban Maryland outside of D.C.
Yeah.
So it was quite an experience.
When you say see more of life, what do you mean? I mean...
They had kids.
Oh.
They had their own kids. They'd been in jail. They'd been arrested, you know. I didn't know that kind of life when I started teaching.
Well, no, I feel like, you know, even if, myself, when I went to it, I was, you know, you had heard about these things. But it was never anything you actually thought you would encounter.
Right.
It was something in the movies.
Right. It's when the probation officer calls you up and asks you how the student is doing. It's like, okay, nice to talk to you. I had a principal who was asking me to do things with these kids, take them on field trips. And these were kids that were from the inner city. And he said, I want you to take them to the Baltimore City Jail so they can see what it's really like to be in jail. And I said, okay. Here I was, a 22-year-old young woman taking these kids who had been in jail to a jail.
So you think they wanted to go?
They didn't care. They got out of class.
It's like
sure they wanted to go.
It's like scared straight. You see those on the talk shows when they do that?
Right.
Right. I don't think it scared them, but it was an interesting experience for me.
Were they saying hello to anybody they knew there?
Not that I could tell, because they weren't allowed to talk. I mean, you weren't allowed to do a lot of things. Like, women could not wear dresses. You had to wear pants. It was just an interesting experience. But it was good for them. And maybe it kept a few out of jail. I don't know.
I hope so.
That's an interesting
field trip to take. I think if we were to try to do that now, take a group of kids. Hey, we're going to go on a field trip today. Your parents don't need to sign off on this. It's fine. We'll take them to the jail.
Yeah, I don't think that would go over well.
That would not fly.
No.
Especially when you're like, this is where you could be.
Yeah, that would not be good.
Yeah. Well, Actually, in New England, I took a kid who was such a severe behavior problem down to the youth detention center in Manchester. That was supposedly the scared straight experience too. No.
So you've had to do this multiple times.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It was. That was worse. I think the city jail trip was a little better than the one to the detention center.
Well, you were on a solo trip with that one? That was a solo trip?
It was one kid and me and a paraprofessional went down.
Wow. Now, thinking back to your time in Baltimore City, is there a wildest moment that just sticks out in your mind? I mean, you've told me stories growing up.
Right.
You told me about the time that, you know, they had to change the way they opened the school because somebody was on the playground.
Right, right. We had a music teacher, sweet woman, very naive, but she came in one morning telling us that she was split between several schools because the arts weren't a priority in Baltimore at that time because of budget issues. And so she came in one morning and said, you know, in the school I was at yesterday, they found a dead body on the playground. I'm like, whoa. She was a little freaked out. Then one time we did have a time where we couldn't put the kids on the buses because in the neighborhood, that it was a very sheltered neighborhood, but there was somebody shooting guns off in the neighborhood. And so we had to keep the kids inside, couldn't put them out. But then that happened in my last experience too. We had a lot of lockdowns there too.
Over at the alternative school?
At the alternative school, yes.
Oh, boy.
So they were doing lockdown stuff even back then.
They were.
That's
right.
Wild.
And that was, probably 80s. So it was happening back then, too.
So when they found this dead body on the playground, I got to go back to it.
No, go ahead. Your eyes were open like a mile wide.
Because I can't imagine just being like, well, we're going to do school today. But, you know, there was just a dead body in the playground yesterday. So did they have, crime scene investigation and stuff?
Or? I'm sure they did. She really was too traumatized by the whole thing to give me a lot of details. But I'm sure they just kept the kids inside the school. In Baltimore, I think a lot of those kids, it wasn't that uncommon for them to see that.
Wow. Now, you watched The Wire.
I did.
And I watched The Wire. Did you watch The Wire?
I watched The Wire,
yep. So that's the TV show that takes place in Baltimore City.
Yep.
For those people maybe have never been to Baltimore City, how does The Wire compare to Baltimore City in your experience?
Pretty true. When I first got that job, I was working a summer job at the Internal Revenue Service as a secretary, and my boss said, you don't want to go there. He said, they have kids who are 12-year-olds who are shooting people. I'm like, oh, gosh. But I went there anyway.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, watching The Wire and seeing the kids in that show, I mean, as a teacher, when I watched that show, because I watched it a few years ago because I was late to the game. I heard it was a good show, so I had to watch it. But watching the kids in that show, it made me so sad as a teacher. And it's kind of crazy to see that you actually dealt with that in your real life.
It was sad. And the other hard thing there was Baltimore has a lot of very old row homes. And I had two kids that actually died in fires because they were so disabled that they couldn't get out. And one parent wasn't even at the house when the house caught on fire. And that was not uncommon either.
Really? That's just part of life down there.
It is.
Wow.
That's wild. I can't imagine.
I mean, I tell my students all the time, I go, I don't want to read about you in the news because I never read anything positive about my students in the news. It's always something unfortunate, something tragic, never anything positive. In rare cases, they made the honor roll, but never anything positive.
Yeah, well, the kids didn't come from families that had money. And the interesting thing about working in Baltimore was it was the beginning of IDEA, so IEPs were just getting started the year after I started teaching. And that was a learning curve for everybody. But parents weren't involved. They were just so grateful to have their kids in school all day long, especially kids with disabilities, that they didn't bother us at all. It's like you didn't hear from parents, which in some ways is good, in some ways is not good.
Well, from the sound of it, it was a safe space to send them.
So. It was. You're right.
That's an interesting, not involved, but very grateful.
Very grateful. They would send you notes, thanks, and give you little gifts, but they didn't show up to school for meetings. And a lot of times they were afraid to do that.
Really? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think school was intimidating, but also some of them didn't have a way to get there. I mean, they had to take the public bus, and if you didn't have the money to get on the bus, you didn't come.
Well, I imagine most of them were probably working 2 to 3 jobs as well. So
either they were working or we had a lot of grandparents raising kids, and sometimes they just couldn't get out and get to the school.
Even when we worked together, we still had grandparents doing the same thing. That was a city school.
I was going to say, even back then, grandparents are primary caretakers for some of our students. I mean, we see that a lot. We talked about it a lot when we were co-teaching.
Right.
Well, a lot of the parents are gone. Either from my perspective, either they were dead or they were in jail or they weren't really able. They just ran off and didn't take the responsibility, especially if a kid had a severe disability. And that was hard for grandparents that were older, but they did it. And I admired that they were able to do that.
Wow. That's
it's eye-opening.
That is. And I'm glad that there's somebody in their lives.
Or they would have been institutionalized, even though they were beginning to close the institutions back then. But there still were a few private ones that would take kids with disabilities. We had some of those in our school, too.
Sure. Sure. Now, so kind of transitioning a little bit, I know you mentioned a couple times that the verbiage has changed over the decades. What were the common terms used in the 70s, and how has it changed to now?
Well, back then it was mental retardation, and there was a mild, and there was a moderate, and there was severe. And actually, my master's degree was in severe handicaps. They called it severe. I think it was severe disabilities back then. But now it's intellectually limited or cognitively impaired. I'm not quite.
Yeah, along those lines.
A little more appropriate, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's just changing with the times. Change is inevitable.
Right. And that's a good thing, that part I agreed with. But back then, they had numbers that would determine whether you were in the severe or the moderate or the mild category of mental retardation. And a lot of the kids I had in my first job in Baltimore were slow learners who just got in trouble in school. And so they sent them to this special center because we were only kids with disabilities, just to get them out of their hair.
So nothing has changed in the whole slow learner department where they've diagnosed them in one category, but they're just either slow and gotten in trouble, but maybe not as severely disabled.
Right.
Challenged.
They should have been if there had been better funding, maybe better teaching practices. Those kids shouldn't have been where they were with us because they got no job training when they were with us.
No.
Which puts them at a real disadvantage, and then they get in trouble.
Yeah, it's true to life, right?
Right. So what subjects were you teaching back then?
I was teaching what it was called social living, which meant everything from sex education to health to community resources. It was mostly surviving in the community is what it was.
Yeah, well, that's a good skill to have.
It was, but some of these kids could have taught me a lot more than I taught them. But that's the way it goes, you know.
Yeah.
What were your area of expertise? Don't say sex ed. This is going to make me embarrassed.
It was not. I had to do a lot of research. I didn't know Baltimore. So I spent a lot of time on my own going to different agencies and getting materials, you know, going on field trips to see myself what was out there just to show the kids. It was a good learning experience, but it was a lot of work. And as a new teacher with no family, it was okay to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you were now we just look things up on the internet. You were
couldn't
going
do that.
You're going there.
Right.
So even then, you had to use unpaid time.
Oh, yes.
To do all the research. Things have not changed so much, right?
No. So that would be one of the BSs that has not changed in decades.
And the money was not good back then.
No. Well, I remember you tell me that all the time. I mean, in fact, people have alluded to the fact that I talk way too much about you telling me to not become a teacher.
Well, I started at $8,900. This is granted 1975, but Baltimore had gotten in trouble because they had gone on strike. And then they passed a law in Maryland that you could not go on strike anymore. Oh. Because that really messed up the school system when you go on strike.
It does. And some states allow that, and some states definitely do not.
Right. So the union was penalized and not able to negotiate for higher salaries for like 3 years after I started.
Oh, that was the penalty.
Yeah. That was great.
You guys went on strike because you're not getting paid enough. Your penalty is you can't ask for more money for 3 years.
Right. But, you know, you survive. You manage to figure it out.
Do you have a decade that you enjoyed the most?
Probably the late 80s and early 90s.
What made it better?
I had a principal who was great. He was younger and very gung-ho and wanted us to get our special ed students out in the community, and he actually helped us. He brought in somebody called Lou Brown, a guy named Lou Brown, who was starting this community training program out in Wisconsin. He brought this guy to us to come talk to us and tell us, you know, how great it was to get kids with disabilities out there in the community. And it was awesome, which meant it was a lot better than sitting in your classroom for 6 hours a day, because it's not real life.
No, definitely not.
These kids needed it. The problem was we weren't funded to take the kids out in the community.
So how did you get them out?
We sold popcorn.
Oh, wow.
I'm not kidding. At lunchtime, my para and I, who was a great guy, we made popcorn. The kids bagged it up, and they had to count the money when it came back in, and we sold popcorn. And that's how we made money to go out in the community. The city was good about giving the students bus tokens so we could go on the public bus.
So at least you could get there if you took public transport.
Right. But if you had to pay for anything out there, you know, you needed that. Yeah. And the kids didn't have, I couldn't ask parents for that kind of money.
No, absolutely not.
So it was okay.
And if you had asked for money, what would the response have been?
Would there have even been a response? There wouldn't have given any. They may have tried, but I couldn't in good conscience ask these parents for money when they were barely scraping by.
Yeah. It's not unlike today. I mean, we do fundraisers for stuff just because we don't want to ask the parents for the money, because it's tough.
It is tough.
Especially when they have multiple kids, and especially if they have disabilities. I mean, that's a lot of money to get help and, you know, therapy and all that stuff.
Right. So, well, we managed, and that was a fun time. I mean, it was hard to leave Baltimore, but it was time to go.
So leaving Baltimore, I know you mentioned New England, so that must have been a shock to go from Baltimore to some New England town.
It was, because it was a small town with a regional school district, so we had kids that would travel on a bus for an hour to get there. And it was high school, and it was kids with, I was a case manager for special ed, so I wasn't in the classroom. And at first it was great, but I kind of missed that interaction with kids on a daily basis. I mean, I would have to go find them and take them out of class, and I didn't want to do that because they needed to be in class. So it was a little bit different. It was good for a while, but I was glad to retire from there.
Yeah.
And then you felt like you needed more.
Well, you know.
Yeah. But so what were one of the bigger culture shocks going from the city to the rural?
Parents felt that their kids were entitled to pass no matter whether they did anything or not. And they would come and yell at you if you didn't pass their child. And we'd have kids that did absolutely nothing, and they still expected them to pass. Now, some of these parents didn't even have a high school diploma, but they expected their kids to get one.
See, that's an interesting shock. Because you talked about Baltimore, where parents weren't really involved, but you get thank you notes and everything else like that. And then now you're going to a small town, and there's involvement, but it's all like negative involvement.
It was kind of negative involvement. And parents would give their kids a free ticket. One kid brought a gun. He had a rifle in his truck sitting in the parking lot, and they caught him and suspended him. The parent came in and complained because he was going to go hunting after school. What's wrong with that? He had a rifle in his truck.
I can't imagine, like today, having a rifle in your truck.
Well, if that happened where we were, holy cow, the whole place would be on lockdown for days.
Yeah.
Days.
And it wouldn't be suspension. It'd be just,
you're gone.
Expulsion. Yeah. Right. And it should have been. It should have been. But the kid had an IEP, and so we had to bend over backwards to get the kid back in. He got tutoring for a little while, and then he came back to school. What lesson was learned there? I don't know. Probably none.
I mean, it seems like there was none, because the consequence was fought.
Right.
And it's like, this is safety of everybody. And going back to Baltimore, it's like, it's a safe space. That's what schools are for, right? So if a kid's got a gun in his truck, that's not a good sign.
Anybody could have gone in there and taken it out. The truck wasn't locked. Anybody could have gone in there, taken it out, and brought it into the building. You know, it was just kind of dumb. But kind of stuff was very frustrating as a teacher there. And I'm sure other teachers were just as frustrated. You're sitting there sitting ducks, you know. There was no security system in that building. The doors were maybe locked, but anybody could open them from the inside and let anybody in. And I keep thinking, now they're a real target for anything could happen up there.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure a lot of schools are, you know, in a similar position with those rural schools, where that's a common, you know, way of life, right? That's not anything out of the ordinary. They are going hunting on the weekends and whatever.
Right.
And they do have the gun rack in the back of their pickup truck.
Right. Or the dead moose in the back of their truck.
They might still have the dead moose or the deer or whatever
right.
in the back of the truck.
Yeah. I had a student one time, I had to do some testing with him, and he told me he was up late. And I said, why are you up late? He says, oh, I work for the volunteer fire department, and somebody hit a moose. So we had to stay up and contact somebody because they come and pick them up. Because they had a list of people that would take dead moose. Because then they can use the meat.
What a prize.
I know.
I can't say I've ever had moose meat, though.
I haven't, and I don't really care to do that. But, you know, it was a way of life up there. It was a different, it was a real, real culture shock.
I'm sure, especially coming from Baltimore City.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Since you've spanned decades. Yeah. I mean, I think you've actually spanned 5 decades, technically.
Probably.
You got the 70s,
right.
The 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. That's 5 decades of span, you know, that you've spanned.
I retired in 2023. Does that make it 6?
Well, I guess technically 6.
Yikes.
Gosh. I mean, there's a little gap here and there for fun, right?
1 year.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
1 year.
6 decades. So you must have seen so many changes within the schools.
I did. And not always good changes. I think the whole IDEA and the special ed laws, especially in New England, they were very paper-driven, and you were always worried about parents coming back and filing suits, and it was very stressful.
So let me ask you, did you have to do the testing, or
yes.
Is it like it is today where, you know, we have a school psychologist, we have speech therapists, or was it just all on your shoulders?
I just had to do the academic testing. We had a school psychologist and speech therapist, but most of our kids didn't qualify for speech. In high school, they don't do speech a lot. But yeah, I had to do the academic testing. I had to write the IEPs. I had to hold the meetings, listen to the complaints. We went to due process, I think, one time. A parent was really off the wall and thought we weren't doing right by her child, and it ended up not going anywhere because we were doing all we could. Sometimes it's just a no-win situation. You do all you can, but it might not be happening in the home.
Right. Now, we've seen that happen before.
Yeah. That was stressful. So when I retired from there, I was glad to go.
No, especially if you're ending on a note like that.
And I didn't see good things happening. I saw the paperwork being crazy, and the whole litigation thing was just always on your shoulders, and I don't think that was good for teachers even.
Data, data, data.
I was
going to
ask.
Yes.
It was
document, document, document.
So it was as data driven back then as well.
Well, this was when I left there in 2017, that's when it was. So it got really bad from 2000 to 2017, I think.
It's ramped up with the data.
It really got ramped up. Yep.
Yeah, because in my career, the data started really pushing data, you know, like 8 years into my career, where that's where I started seeing it, like really, you got to have data for this, data for that, data for this. And
and when do you have time to teach?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
I got to keep track of all the data.
Right.
I mean, there's tips and tricks that we can go into at some other point, but.
Or you'd have a para, and I have a para taking data. You know, it was crazy. And not enough teaching was done. And I think it didn't help with building relationships with kids because you were too busy.
So do you think it was the data that made you want to retire? Too much?
I think the data and the documentation and the whole special ed process made me want to leave.
Yeah.
And the district was always afraid of being sued because it was a very costly thing if that happened. And we weren't that big, you know. It wasn't like a city like Baltimore or something. It was a smaller district.
Well, now there's so many advocates out there, too, for people with IEPs and everything. I don't know if that was prevalent earlier on or when that really started to become more common.
I think it became more common in the late 2010. We had advocates that would come, and sometimes they were great, and they would say, hey, kid, you need to straighten up. It's not their fault. Or other times they would have unreasonable requests.
Been there with the unreasonable requests.
Yeah.
But it's nice when the advocate also understands both sides.
Once in a while you get one that will, but
they must be getting paid by the achievement.
I don't know.
Not by the hour, but by the accommodation. Every additional accommodation on the IEP, they get an extra $50.
Right. Oh my gosh, you can get really rich on that.
It's not a bad gig.
I think that's going to be my new gig. Listen, this is how I charge. For every accommodation I get, you pay a flat fee.
Mm.
You decide how many you want.
Yeah, but the transition from leaving New England and moving further south was great. The alternative school was a hoot.
Well, alternative schools, I think of alternative schools, and it's like, okay, you couldn't handle their actual school. We got to send you to another school. We're going to take all the bad kids and put them together.
Well, there were a lot of kids that sometimes they were parents. I had a lot of moms that came because they had to leave because they got pregnant and had the baby. Okay. And they came back and wanted to get a diploma. I had one that had four kids.
Four?
I mean, she was probably 18.
Wow. Very busy.
But she came back and she actually finished.
Very good.
It made you feel good that you're actually doing something. I mean, there were some kids that probably shouldn't have been there because they had probably been encouraged by their homeschool to go somewhere else just because of their behaviors. And some made it and some didn't. And we didn't have to keep them. It was a choice.
That's great. Well, that's nice.
Right. The principal could say, you're out of here. If you're not going to follow our rules, you're not staying. And that's what happened.
We need that.
Yeah. If we had that more, I think more kids would take it seriously.
Right.
Seriously.
But it's nice when you have the kids who come back, even with four kids. Like, that's remarkable to come back and want to get your diploma and everything else like that. So kudos
to her. It was. Yeah. She finished. I'm not sure what she's doing now. But, you know, she had a lot of support through social services. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was parental support from her parents. It was mostly she sought it out and got it, which you got to give her credit for that.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it. And I've had students over the past actually, you know, sign up for, you know, the government food assistance programs and make sure that they are able to get that. And, we, you know, I've helped them fill out the paperwork. I've never seen the paperwork, but now I have. And that, you know,
it's that's a lot of work.
It is.
You kind of need somebody to help you out because some of those kids did not read well.
No, and they don't. And even just comprehending the directions and understanding what they need and.
Right.
You know, sometimes they, you know, ask questions that they're just not familiar with, like, you know, for example, mother's maiden name. That was
right.
One.
Right.
They're like, well, what's that?
Right.
You have to explain that.
Right. Yeah, but it was a great experience. And those teachers worked hard and they were efficient. And I admired what they got done teaching English. They would teach English, and I think we did 12-week sessions. They would get through a whole course of English. Of course, the classes were long, but they pushed to get those kids done. And they did a great job. Wow.
Yeah, 12 weeks isn't a lot of time.
No, it was amazing what they could do. And some of these kids had taken the class and failed it probably five times, you know. So they were back taking it again to get the credit. But it was a very efficient system.
Good. It's nice to hear, like, because people hear alternative school. And I mean, there's a wide range of alternative schools. But it's nice to hear when there's a system in place that seems to be working.
And it, you know, it's part of the public schools. Which some of them are private, you know, and this was part of the public. They didn't have to pay. They had to get there, which sometimes wasn't easy if you lived in one part of the area and had to get over to that school. It could have been a challenge. I have one kid that was attacked at the bus stop. You know,
attacked at the bus stop?
Yeah, he was. It was the public bus stop, and he was assaulted.
Wow.
He didn't come back.
Well, you know, mugged for money, I'm assuming?
Probably.
Jeez.
We had the lockdowns there, too, because they had the shooter sound things that they could tell when gunshots had gone off.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so we had a few lockdowns.
You went from one, you know, city to rural and back to city.
You know, I enjoyed the city better.
Did you? Well, what's it about the city versus the rural that you liked?
Well, it was never a dull moment, I gotta tell you.
You're not wrong.
No, I don't know. I liked the city. It was fun. You had to have a lot of camaraderie if you were working in a city school. You had to get along with the other staff because you guys had to help each other out. And that I think was a little different from the rural school.
A lot more camaraderie in the city school because everybody's suffering together.
Exactly. And there were teachers that had been there for like 30 years in the same school.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. And they retired from
there. That's going to be Mr. Hematics. He's going to be there forever.
Go for it.
Well, you trauma bond with all your teachers, right?
Like, you do.
That's how it is. Like, trauma you build bond. Such relationships that no one else understands. And like I've talked about in the past, like my wife teaches. So it's nice to have the understanding when I come home because it's trauma
you
bonding.
You do. Yeah. You have to. Yeah.
Because you deal with a lot of stuff that you didn't think you'd have to deal with.
Right. Right.
And situations that come up that you're like, is this my job? Right. Is this real life?
I know.
So and from what you were saying, I mean, one of the things about the city, I think, is it seems like students were more appreciative. And I think, to me, that's one of the most rewarding parts about my job.
I saw that in the last school, that they were very appreciative. When they finished, they would thank you. You know, at graduation, they would come up and thank you. It's like, whoa, I didn't see that in the rural school system. But it was different. And it was a good experience.
Interesting. Yeah, it's nice to see the perspective of all the...
Yeah.
throughout the years. And
right. Yep.
It's nice to hear that things are similar at different parts of our country, you know?
Yeah. Throughout the country, there's still like the same trauma bonding.
Yeah.
There was a lot of trauma bonding, I think. Yeah.
Some of the same, you know, tomfoolery and, you know, idiocracy.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. But it was good. I mean, it was amazing. And the experience in Baltimore was just amazing, really. To see, I worked in the last placement I was in. It was a school in a neighborhood that had been built. Sparrows Point was a big steel plant. Bethlehem Steel had a big plant there, like in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And they had built housing for their people to live in. Not great. But the school was in the midst of that housing community. And the kids didn't leave that community. We would offer options for kids that were brighter to maybe go to a different kind of a public school, and they would say no because they didn't want to leave their community because they'd never been on a bus to get out of the community. But it was just, it was amazing because the students in the school who were not students with disabilities were all white. The students who did have disabilities were mostly black.
Wow.
And the teachers that were teaching the students in the regular grades were mostly black. And it worked. Well,
that's nice. I mean, there's diversity, and at the same time, there's not.
Right. But it was amazing that these teachers would stay there for 30, 40 years, and then they would retire from there, and they were very happy. But you wonder if that transferred as these kids got older. You know, did their perception, I don't know, and racism change?
I hope.
I hope so, too. It was an amazing situation to watch, really.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic. I've never heard of that. I mean, I've seen schools where the teachers are, you know, maybe all one race or the other, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And that most of the special ed teachers, like me, we were white. And we had kids who were minorities.
Wow.
It's interesting.
So the camaraderie there was exceptional. I mean, you had to get along.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's important, especially community building in schools. I mean, right. We talk about it all the time in our schools, that community building is so important.
Right.
You need to know where the kids are coming from.
Yeah. And that one teacher that I told you about, the dead body on her playground, she had acquired a set of handbells. Do you remember?
Oh, did I?
Ed,
I
probably, you actually came and helped
did
us play
I help?
One
did
time.
I play?
You did, yeah. So I had kids that were not disabled, but I had a handbell choir. And we performed at the PTA one night, which the PTA was okay. They actually had a few people come, you know, which I didn't see that in my last placement. And I didn't see that in the rural placement up in the New England. But the parents came, and it was interesting because these were all kids that had come from the elementary, the sixth graders or whatever, and they played bells with their parents. And you helped out, Ed. Wow. I think I was short somebody, and I had to drag you along and say, can you come? And this was after school, which parents didn't usually come.
I remember it was nighttime. I think I remember complaining a little bit.
You probably did, but that's okay.
We talked about your musical abilities before.
Oh, well,
so.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, I didn't know bells. You didn't list bells.
I did not list bells. It was one of those that I enjoyed. Oh. You know, you were given like two notes to play, and you just had to time it right. Sounds easy.
It's hard.
It's not easy.
No, not at all. I've seen the bells performed before, and
yeah.
It's pretty miraculous to have the timing down.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, your dear old mom, Sandy, there was playing bells, and you brought it from church all the way up to the school.
I did. Well, it was great. They had a boss. They thought it was fun, and they got out of class for like half an hour, so not, you know?
That's one way to pitch it.
Right, right.
So one burning question I have for you.
Yep.
A lot of our teachers who've taught for like 30, 40 years, when new initiatives come up, they always tell me, oh, don't worry, you know, a year from now, we'll be onto something else, and then it'll start all over again. Now, did you experience that?
Oh, yeah, they changed the name.
Yeah.
They just changed the name on that.
Okay.
It's like, really? I've heard this before. I'd sit in professional development and go, oh, God, you just want to put your head on the desk and go to sleep. Yep.
So it's just changing the name.
That's
what I've been told. So it's nice to hear it from your perspective.
This is what the veteran teachers would tell us. I remember that. Oh, don't worry about it. We've done this before. It was called whatever, you know.
And it'll last for a year, and then they'll find something else.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that they're always looking for new initiatives, but you got to follow through on it.
Well, if we could follow through once in a while and stick with it to see if it actually works. We never get our baseline data.
No.
They're like, yeah, we tried it.
We get data for 1 year, and it's like, yeah, we'll try something else.
Somebody complained too much, and they moved on to the next thing, but they just renamed it so to get that teacher to buy
or
it.
They change, like, five different things so you can't pinpoint what made the difference.
Change the order. Change
they
the
may
acronym.
Have gotten a grant, you know, either from the state or the, you know, feds, and they thought, oh, we'll throw this money into that, you know, and they buy all these books and things, and then it's gone after 2 years.
Yep. I've experienced
There's
that
a lot of waste in education when you think about it.
You know where they're not wasting it? My pocket.
Nope.
I know. Yeah, but try working for $8,900 a year. Granted, it was 1975, but it didn't get any better. It took a long time before it got any better.
True.
Well, from talking to you, it seems like you really enjoyed your career. Now, would you do it all again if you could? Or would you do something different?
I might do something different. I think it's changed.
Yes!
It has changed. There's so much more accountability, which isn't good. Mm-hmm. You know, I think teachers are required to do a whole lot more than, and it was fun when I did it. I don't know if it would be fun now going back to start all over again. I don't know if it would be.
Well, the accountability, I get it 100% because
I understand.
Yeah, I get it. But at the same time, it's always the teacher's fault.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, there's a lot of variables here. Being a math guy, you got to look at all the variables. It's not just one thing that's really messing everything up.
Right.
But
sure.
I get you on the accountability stuff.
You know, it just got to be, it was fun. It was, we had a great, you know, and when the teachers are happy, they get along well and you can accomplish a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but if you're stressed, then teachers start sniping at each other and teachers can be nasty. You know,
Well, we got that school mentality, right?
Right. You know, so I don't know if it would be as fun. I wouldn't tell people not to go into teaching.
Well, Ed says that you told him not to.
I did. Because back then I wasn't making a whole lot of money. If you want a job that makes more money, don't be a teacher.
Yeah, words out of her mouth. I swear. We've been validated. For many episodes, I've been saying this. I've been finally validated.
Yeah, but then your sister became a teacher too, so it's like you can't win, you know?
She's also an idiot.
I know. But you guys get paid a lot better than we did back then.
Well, kids also like to do what go against what the parent says, right? So if you say, don't become a teacher, it's like, I'll show you, I'll be a teacher.
No, I was like, I believe you. And then I was like, I have an idea.
And it was a good one. You're a good teacher.
Well, I sometimes hear that.
You both are good.
I mean, I will say that I even worked with dear old mom.
He did.
She was my boss for a year.
That must have been an interesting
dynamic. Actually, it wasn't bad. You know, working with dear old mom, it was one of those situations where I needed a job. And Sandy was like, you need a job. And I was like, no, mom, I'll find one. And I didn't. And eventually it was like, oh, I need money. So I went and I worked as a paraprofessional.
And you did a great job because that kid was tough.
Yeah.
He was a tough kid and he needed a man or a male figure because he just would roll over all the women that we would have working with him. And he wasn't bright.
No, he wasn't.
He had a lot of learning issues.
He did. You think about, I've never tamed a wild horse, but I feel like that's what it would have been like because it was weeks, probably months of finally he was like, okay, we Mr. Plan, we're okay now.
He didn't trust, he wasn't eager to and I think he'd had trauma in his childhood that it trust was not a thing that was he was good at.
But this was a kid that if he had to go to the restroom, I had to escort him to the restroom and wait outside
or he'd take off.
Wow, you handled it.
I did.
And apparently did a good job.
Yeah,
and he graduated. Yeah. I think he ended up working for a livery service or something, like a limousine company. Yeah. Yeah, he did okay.
All right, so he did something with his life.
You contributed to his success.
Yeah, I always do wonder where some of my former students, not all of them, because I'm not really good with names, but some of these names do stick out. Like, and it's for me, it's a lot of my first students that I get, and you remember them. Or if you change schools, you remember some of the first students you've had, and then eventually there's like the middle gap where they just all blend together except for a few key ones.
Right.
You know, like we've come up with nicknames for kids. And then when you mention them, like, oh, yeah, I remember, that one. And, just you do wonder where they are. I hope that someday I run into these kids or just get, maybe an email. Maybe that's all I really want is an email. I'm alive. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Yeah. it is nice to get that, like, you know, background of, hey, how'd you do? Oh, yeah. Look at you, you're successful. Great.
We put you into the world. Did you make it?
Yeah.
It's kind of scary out there, you know?
Yeah. It's a tough world out there.
It is tough.
And then you see some kids and you're like, oh my gosh, are they going to make it out there? Right. And like, especially for you both working in special ed, I mean, I see mostly typical kids. So when you see this, it's like, oh gosh, I worry about them. I can't imagine how both of you feel worrying about your kids with their disabilities.
Right. And they didn't have a lot of services in New England. It was hard for those kids to find jobs, and there weren't the jobs. I mean, you're up in the middle of nowhere. There aren't a lot of jobs. They ended up working for their parent. One family, they picked up junk off the side of the road and sold it. It's like, really?
I guess if they're making a living.
Not a good one.
No. Well, that's unfortunate. And if there's not a lot of opportunities out there in the middle of nowhere and rural.
There weren't.
In the rural woods there, it's hard.
Right, right.
But. So for advice, other than don't become a teacher, what would be some advice that you would give to a teacher that might be in their first or second year, or maybe even just thinking about being a teacher?
It's really a great profession, and it's an admirable profession, and I think it's getting more respect as time goes on. But I would also say don't give up after your first year. Your first year is your hardest. I think I drove home on the last day of school after my first year in tears because I thought there was this one young woman I had. She was like 21 and she had a bunch of kids. And I thought, what did I do for her? You know, you question yourself, but you are doing the right thing and you're doing good things and you can't doubt yourself. And also to make connections within your building. Yes. You've got to have peers that can support you and you can support them. And then you'll be okay.
I think that's great advice because you need someone to lean on.
Right.
And you can't be too hard. To. Yeah. And you can't be too hard on yourself. Right. Especially if you're trying something new in your classroom. Something's not going to work.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Right.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
And you can't just beat yourself up and be like, well, what am I doing here?
Right. Well, everybody try. You try it once, you got to do something else because that didn't work. You just have to keep moving on. Flexibility is very important as a teacher. And you guys know.
Yeah. But more importantly, you said don't give up. But when do you give up? When do you finally go, I'm out?
I don't know. I didn't give up for 47 years, so yeah,
I can't tell you. But what advice would you give to the new teacher? And you go, you know what? Maybe this isn't for you. Maybe it's time to give up.
I think you got to look at what feedback you're getting from the kids and from your administrators. And if they're looking at you like, then maybe you need to give up, you know? Not everybody's cut out to be a teacher.
No, it's not. It's not a profession for everybody. You know, I've known people who have given up.
I was going to say, we've all encountered people who you're like, do you really want to be here? Should you be here?
I've met people who are like, I'm going to become a teacher. And then they go into it and then you're like, oh, I quit. I couldn't do it. And you see their personalities maybe. And I can see that sometimes they're not going to work.
You just don't want the kids to pay the penalty of your ineptness. Yeah. You know, I think people have to be really careful. And I think student teaching is great. And I know in my undergrad, I had a lot of practicum experiences out in the classroom before I even student taught. You have to have that.
So if you're saying if you're going to give up, do it in undergrad.
Do it in undergrad as an undergrad student?
Yeah. Like give up before you graduate.
Well, hopefully your professors will say, maybe this isn't for you.
And they don't, though. They're usually pretty encouraging because I've had student teachers. And I've had a student teacher who I really felt was not ready for at least the environment I was in at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking with their supervising professor, and I was like, oh, I don't know. This is not for them.
Do they have a quota of something, how many they need to graduate or something?
Maybe there's not enough.
True.
And you're sitting there going, like, they're going to get eaten alive. And they did get eaten alive. And you tried to step in as a supervising teacher in the classroom while they're student teaching. And I'm just like, this is not working.
Yeah. Yeah, I had one like that too, a couple like that in Baltimore. But, you know, they meant well. It just wasn't going
to
work.
Right. They always were looking to do the best for the students. It just had a hard time delivering it.
Right, right. I don't know. Everybody is different. You know, you can't tell one person what's right for them and what's right for somebody else. I think it is not a profession that you go into like, oh, well, I can't do anything else. I'm going to be a teacher. Don't do that.
Isn't that the classic saying,
though? No. Those who can't do, teach. And those who can't teach, teach special ed.
You're right. And they don't realize how hard special ed is.
Yeah, then they get there and they're like, ugh.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know.
So as we wrap things up, you know, you're giving advice to the teachers. But what about to the administrators, the leaders of the school buildings and the school districts?
Take care of your teachers. Make sure they're paid well and they're not overworked, and don't be on their backs all the time.
Yeah.
You really have to, you know, you got to get to know your teachers, and then know their strengths and use them, because I don't think that was always used.
And I agree with that 100%. Yeah. That's the most important thing, right? If you want your kids to be successful, well, you need to have teachers who are wanting to be there.
Right.
And willing to put in the extra effort.
Yep.
And they only do that if they're happy, right?
Right. Right. I had that one principal in Baltimore, he was young, and he would make sure that we all had breakfast like once a week. Like,
really?
That was great, you know?
Sign me up. I'm in for that.
So it was just little things like that. Teachers appreciate that.
Yeah. Or even just time to get things done in the day.
Right.
I remember we had years together where they would give us time to do things in the day. They'd book on the calendar officially professional development.
Right. Oh, nice.
And then they would kindly go, oh, the time is yours. Go get things done that you need. And we're like, yeah, I'll take that. I need that. And then we'd still get the professional development points or credits.
Good. That's great. Yeah, you have to do that. Administrators need to be aware of their staff and fight for them. And then they can deal with the upper echelon, you know. But if you don't stick up for your teachers, you're dead in the water.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice.
Well, Mom, thank you for surviving.
Thank you.
Not five, but I think you've spanned, what, six decades? You made it into the 2020s?
I did.
Holy cow. Well, thank you for surviving and making the most of it. And even though you told me not to do it, you were still supportive. So, Mom, thank you very much. I love you very much.
You're welcome. I know.
And we'll go and then, you know, thank you to all our listeners, right?
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. It was nice being with you guys.
Yeah, Sandy.
And letting me vent.
Yeah, I appreciate all of your perspectives and stuff. And thank you for sitting down with us. We thought it was the most appropriate first interview because, I mean, Ed's here because of you, right? Yes. Even though you told him not to be a teacher.
I did tell him not to, yep, but you know.
But we appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for listening. If you made it this long, you're probably ready for retirement, right?
Yeah, you're definitely ready for retirement if you made it this far. And we'll see you next time, unless you you rage quit and decided to swear off this podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you again for listening. Whoa, yeah, where the laughter's loud and the sarcasm.